When I started this whole thing, so many people came up to us and said that what you're doing is completely wrong. We've had ups and downs, we've had a huge amount of tailwinds, but we've also had a huge amount of headwinds come our way. If we have to enhance our capacity today, we can do that very quickly, as we've done in the past as well. While this is about creation of wealth and it's about creation of that whole ecosystem and about creation of an industry, what drives us actually is also the whole disruption that we are creating.
Welcome to the Energizing India podcast, a program that focuses on electric mobility in India, giving a voice to this industry sector. My name is Ravin Mirchandani, and on this program, we feature conversations with key protagonists and industry leaders, creating a narrative on how to facilitate faster adoption of electric mobility in India. Today, we speak to one of the crucial linchpins of the entire EV movement in India. As an entrepreneur, he is widely recognized for his role in shaping the Indian electric scooter industry and also for his contributions to various forums in the electric vehicle sector, both in India and globally. He completed his Master's in Business Administration from the Huron University in London and then apprenticed with Land Rover in the West Midlands before returning to India and becoming the first entrepreneur to introduce electric vehicles to the country back in 2001. His EV venture was already selling vehicles in 2007, before Tesla had even sold its first car commercially. He has held various key positions in organizations such as YPO, or the Young Presidents Organization, and EO, Entrepreneurs Organization, and was previously also chairman of the Confederation of Indian Industries New Delhi State Council. He is the managing director of Hero Electric. Navin Munjal, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ravin. Thank you. It's a pleasure being here today. Thank you so much for having me.
Navin, you find time to teach future generations of Indian leaders at the Masters Union School of Business on the economics of electric vehicles. You're also an advanced open water diver, an adventure sports enthusiast, and also an extremely adept street photographer with your own website, navinmunjal.com, which showcases your particular aesthetic and street photography talent. I can tell you, your photography has astounded some of the best photographers that we showcased your pictures to. Elon Musk did a cameo acting on The Big Bang Theory and recently also on Saturday Night Live. Richard Branson circumnavigated the globe in a hot air balloon. And you have a website with some amazing photography from your many business trips. Navin, is there a link between very successful entrepreneurs and chasing your passions hungrily?
Thank you, Ravin. Thank you for your kind words. I think, you know, when I look at, and if I'm talking about photography here, so when I look at my photography and my journey through photography, it's basically, in a way, kind of a de-stress for me. It's a time when I'm completely at peace with myself. I've made some great friends along the way, you know, in terms of with my photography and people who've I've met over the past who I've taken pictures of, who have sent them the pictures. Now, I was talking to somebody about this, and we were just talking about photography and how important photography is, or any art for that matter, actually. And we began talking about spirituality, and that conversation led from one to another. And then we started talking about what does spirituality actually mean to somebody? What is it? What is the meaning of spirituality? So it means when you're at peace with yourself. That's one of the meanings that came out. And it's the same case with my photography. So the kind of work that I do, the kind of industry that I've been in, we've had ups and downs. We've had a huge amount of tailwinds, but we've also had a huge amount of headwinds come our way. That is a time, even when I'm stressed, I just put on my music and I go and start processing my pictures. And that's something I absolutely just calms me down completely, puts me in a different zone altogether in order for me to go back to what I was doing earlier. And so that's, for me, it's a great de-stress.
Leaning into the discomfort and finding your own spiritual solace, you don't often find business leaders speaking like that. So Navin, you interned at Land Rover. It was at Solihull, I expect. And back then, was it part of the BMW group or maybe even Ford, perhaps? How was that experience and what did you learn?
So that was an excellent, outstanding experience for me. I mean, I would rate that as one of my finest experiences, because here, you know, so before I went to do my master's in UK, so I had worked in our various companies, but those are all group companies. You know, when you're going in a group company, no matter what you say, you know, that I'm coming in as an intern and I'm coming in there. But nevertheless, nobody in the employees don't look at you that way. They look at you as being a future boss, or they look at you as being the son of a boss, or whatever be the case. And so you get that level of respect, but you don't get that level of understanding or the knowledge that you're supposed to get, or you don't learn from that grassroots level. So the day when I went in to Land Rover at that point, that time it was a BMW company and they just bought it from Honda at that point of time. And when I went in there, the first day I was told is that, you know, there's this group of this delegation coming at Birmingham Airport. Take my car and here off you go, and you have to go and pick them up, do a sightseeing tour with them, and then bring them back here by so and so time. And so I didn't know who they were. I didn't know anything at all. And that's how the whole thing, I suddenly was immersed into it. I jumped straight into it. Unfortunately, I had to come back because of parental pressure and all that emotional blackmail that happens with the families. And absolutely thoroughly enjoyed that part of my life journey.
Navin, we'll then focus on the Hero Group, perhaps. Hero is an iconic Indian group. It's been around since 1956 and is such a diversified group now. One of the largest automotive groups in the country. Catering to toddlers and baby bikes, young couples squatting on their first mobike. At one time, even the primary means of rural transport with the Hero Majestic moped. Today, you're changing the face of India with the Hero electric scooter. You still maintain your position as the largest selling electric scooter in India, despite intense competition. What is your vision for Hero Electric?
While this is about creation of wealth and it's about creation of that whole ecosystem and about creation of an industry, but it's also what drives us actually is also the whole disruption that we are creating, that we have to transition. We are transitioning from one huge sector to a nascent one right now, or an early stage one right now, but that is going to become very, very big going forward. So I think it's the bigger picture, it's a macro picture which drives us, which keeps me going. And a lot of times when I look at this overall business, and when we face problems, and which we have numerous times in the past, and we continue to do so, it's basically, I don't know how to explain this, but I kind of just, you know, transition myself from a micro to a macro level and start looking at it from there on. So the way I visualize it is that I'm looking at it from an aircraft 40,000 feet up. And what does the world look like to you? And does this blimp that you've got right now, is that the end of it? Or is there a horizon beyond that? And more often than not, I find that there is a horizon, or there's a story beyond that. And so look at the bigger picture and then come back, jump into the micro picture, you know, when you have to. So I think this transitioning between micro and macro, I think, is a very, very important factor. So I'm looking at this industry that there's absolutely no two ways about it. This industry will disrupt the way that we commute. This will change the face of India going forward. Now, whether it's going to take 3 years or 5 years or 10 years, I don't know. That's, you know, a lot of crystal ball gazing. But the change is inevitable. And that's what I'm trying to do here.
So we'll stay with that theme, Navin, in terms of your plans for India and what you've achieved so far. How many Hero electric vehicles are there on the road today?
350,000 vehicles, in excess of that.
350,000, that's quite a lot of vehicles already. Last year, 2020, you sold some 50,000 electric scooters. We saw your advertisement on LinkedIn, and congratulations on that. It was a record year for you. This year, in fact, you expect to double that. Why are you so confident in this sort of aggressive growth in 2021?
See, there's numerous things that have happened in the last couple of years. So basically, you know, when you look at it in the last 4 or 5 years, and this has been happening, I mean, we've been doing this before that as well. Again, I've got to step back a little bit. So, for example, technology in the batteries. Now, even though we've initially, when we launched our vehicles, they were all lead acid battery vehicles. And we understood the problems that came with lead acid batteries in terms of the life of the battery, the size and portability of the battery, and that, you know, the way that the battery is actually used. So when you look at how the battery performance declines over a period of time, so when you come to the end of life of the battery, you know, suddenly it kind of dips down. It's not a taper down effect that you have with the lithium ion battery kind of thing, where the performance degrades over a period of time. So we understood those problems. The second, we've been fairly conservative when it comes to numbers that we talk about. What is the conversion going to happen by 2025? What is the conversion going to happen by 2030? Even though, you know, there are companies which talk about 100% by 2025 and 100% by 2030, etc. We said, you know, let's not look at those numbers because those are ideal numbers. And we know that in a country like India, and for that matter, anywhere else in businesses, it said things are anything but ideal. So we looked at numbers of 30% conversion by 2030. We looked at the number of 10% conversion by 2025. Now, that is a very, very conservative number. And I am clear that it's going to be, the numbers are going to be much higher than that. But at that number, what happens to business? Are we able to going to be able to make it into a successful business or not? Are we going to be a highly profitable company or not? Are we going to be able to create shareholder wealth, and for everybody who's been associated with us for the past over a decade, whether it's our dealers, it's our suppliers, whoever be the case. So from that perspective, it absolutely makes sense. Now we've been able to get the pricing of the vehicles down to below what an IC engine vehicle pricing is. We understand that pyramid very, very well now, the IC engine pyramid. We know how people are buying. We know at what price point they're buying and what they're using those vehicles for. How much are they commuting? We've matched that up with vehicles from our side. So the quality has improved. The pricing has reduced. The performance of the vehicles has improved. And around that, we are creating a charging infrastructure, which is a very basic but dense charging infrastructure. So customers, where they have range anxiety issues or where they feel that they may not have enough charge, etc., this is basically to eliminate that. So it's a multi-pronged strategy. It's a multi-pronged approach to reach to the customer and give him confidence that we are here. You've got a product which is far better than what it ever was earlier. You've got 5-year warranties. So the pull is there now for us. We are already at a level right now of about 9,000 units a month. So if we continue on that same path, which we intend to do, then we are going to be doubling over the previous year. And we're going to close that year at over 100,000 units, gearing up for 200,000 plus the following year.
The following year. I'm smiling, Naveen, because I had a list of 22 questions and you've answered all of them in that one answer. but if we'll stay with the numbers then, Naveen, your production volumes this year you've announced will go up from 70,000 to, I think, 2.5 lakhs to 250,000 a year. If you look at the competitive analysis, you know, Ather Energy anticipates that they will manufacture 1 million scooters a year in the next few years. And Ola has announced they'll start at 2 million and go up to 10 million a year, which is an astounding number by any means. What are your plans to address this sort of serious capacity and supply increase in the market in the immediate future? And what do you reckon will be the impact on Hero? Because the scales are so radically different.
See, Ravin, when you look at crystal ball glazing, I mean, we can come up with any number. It's not, I mean, and we've already got a proven track record. So last year when we had projected that, you know, we're going to do for 2021, we're going to do 50,000 units. We actually closed it at 54,000 units. So we've actually exceeded that. The previous year, whatever we had projected to our board, even in 2018, we are on track year on year. Now, where we come from is a very scientific way where we have calculated how this market is going to expand and how it's going to convert. And a part of that is also based on how, historically, how IC engines have converted. How many years did it take them for them to really establish themselves, disrupt the market, and what happens thereof? So every company will have their own strategy on what they feel is going to be the market share and what they feel is going to be the large the size of the market, etc., and what they're gearing up for. We are very clear that, you know, we've got our ears and eyes on the ground completely. If we have to enhance our capacity today, we can do that very quickly, as we've done in the past as well. So we've jumped from the same plant, which was producing 17,000 units till just a few years back. We've gone over 54,000 units in the same plant with more efficiencies, etc. So we have our own plans. And what the numbers I'm telling you about are the base case scenario numbers. Should certain things change, these numbers would explode. And we are there. I mean, our supply chains are ready. I've already built up on that. Conversion is going to happen. Disruption is going to happen. And I would be the happiest, you know, if that disruption happens faster rather than slower, because we've invested so heavily into this and we've got so much of our energy and everything that's gone into this sector. So I don't know what their thought process is. I would look at, you know, what we've done in the past, what the numbers are in the past, and how do you jump up from there, and what is practically possible and what is not.
So if I stay with that, Naveen, you've announced that you're earmarking about 700 crores in investment to gear up your own capacities. Is this going to be self-funded? Are you contemplating an IPO at some stage? Because you are going to need massive in funding to meet this demand. We'll go over the numbers in my next question, because you've touched a very pertinent point on conversion. But if all of that happens, the investment needs are going to be huge. How are you funding the growth?
No, it's not going to be all internally funded. We would be looking at external funding as well. Mm-hmm. But IPO is not something that's going to happen in any time, not at this point of time. We are too small for that at this point. So we need to get a house in order before we go in for a IPO or something of those lines, which eventually is inevitable, because if you have to grow to that scale, we are going to have to go to the public. We are going to have to go to the public markets. Now it's a matter of time and scale. At what stage do we do that? So we are looking at external funding. We should be able to announce something very soon as well.
I know it's a little early to talk about it, but would it be an Indian listing, or would you go to New York?
Too early right now.
So we'll stay on the very pertinent topic of conversion and the numbers. You've done your own analytics, and I want to run you through some as well, Naveen. The government has talked about, you know, they had this target of full electrification by 2025, which then became a hope for 2030. You are more realistic in your own estimations, and conservatively anticipating, if I recall correctly, about a 30% adoption 9 years from now. In 2030. So if you go over the numbers, there are approximately 330 million registered vehicles in India in 2020. 9% of these are registered as public transport vehicles, which accumulates to 30% or 29 million vehicles, sorry. The remaining 91% consists of private vehicles, of which 81% are two-wheelers and 12% are cars. So within public transport, there's 23 million vehicles that are trucks and buses. And in the two-wheeler segment, there is some 267 million two-wheelers on the roads today. So your own estimate of a 30% penetration of electric vehicles means that over the next 8 or 9 years, some 80 million electric two-wheelers will need to be sold in order to have just that conservative conversion. In the discussions we had with protagonists in the industry, a number of people believe that, you know, the next cycle of buying a two-wheeler will be the last ICE decision. And 3 years from now, people will progressively, very naturally make the decision to move to an electric vehicle. So then I thought, you know, we should look at capacities and what's available in the market. And if you'd look at Ola's stated capacity of 10 million and Aether's of 1, and your own plans to be in that range, as you just said, even with all of these plants on full capacity, assuming no other growth, we'd only be able to do a 50% conversion from ICE to electric vehicles by 2030, which is quite damning, actually, if you think about it. So in your opinion, what other dynamics can change for this market to turn upside down for us to fulfill Minister Gadkari's hope of full electrification by 2030?
See, Ravin, when you look at any conversion in this, I mean, here, at least from our perspective, we are talking about it, not considering at this point of time that the government's really going to step on the gas in terms of pushing this whole thing or EV movement through. Now, when you look at disruption that happens, now, when you look at our transitioning of India from BS4 to BS6, now, why did that happen? It wasn't a voluntary move by the companies. Mm-hmm. This is because the government had set a very strong and had a set a timeline in place to say that by so-and-so date, you have to convert. And there's going to be no options. You have to just start investing now. Even though we had COVID lockdowns and we had all the disruption last year, that number didn't deviate too much. That they didn't really deviate from there. And so there was a clear-cut goal. And that's what we need to do for EV as well. The government needs to set a goal. The government, it cannot be just left to market forces, and it cannot be just left to open things. And then that's what the conversion is going to be at that point of time. If you have to convert completely, then set a goal to say that 100% electric by 2030.
He did try to do that. Minister Gadkari did try to do that, but then had to backtrack because the ICE industry, or the mafia, should I call it, came out quite vehemently and said it's impossible to do so. So he did try, didn't he?
Government has tried. And you're right, they have backtracked. I don't know what the reason for it is. I'm not going to comment on that part of it. But in order for that 100% to happen, one, the government needs to set the goal to say that, you know, 100% conversion by so-and-so date. And that 9-year plan is a good enough plan. It's not that far. But it's not that short either. So goal is one part of it. The second part of it is that right now, for example, the government intent is there, and which is why they came out with FAME 1 and then now FAME 2. But these are not very long-term policies. FAME 1 came out with a 2-year plan, which was extended to 2 more years, but that is over a period of time. Now FAME 2 has come out with a 3-year plan. Very good outlay of 10,000 crores. They're talking about 1 million two-wheelers on the road in 3 years, 500,000 three-wheelers on the road. Now, whatever be the policy, the push is there, but isn't it time for the government also now to realign or to reassess where do we stand right now? We are 2 years down into the policy. Are we on track with what we had planned to be in 3 years? Or is there a deviation? If there is a deviation, why is there a deviation? What is the corrective action? Let me not spell out what the points here are, but nevertheless, when we set up any business, you and I both come from industries. When we set up any business, we set up any new industry, any new plant, any new sector, whatever be the case, we are constantly reassessing. Is it working or not working? If it's not working, we rejig our strategy. We realign our strategy, because on day one, you don't know what's going to be successful and what's not. That's what's required here, that rejigging of strategy, because people are not buying the vehicles as per the way that the government had defined it. There was a fallacy there which said that, you know, a customer is only going to buy an electric vehicle which is of the equal performing to an IC engine vehicle. That is not true at all. He's not going to deviate from his price band. When you look at the whole pyramid, 85% of the vehicles are the commuter or the entry level segment. That's up to 90,000 price point. Majority of those vehicles in any case are financed as well. So when you look at that price band of about 70,000-75,000 rupee price band for a commuter vehicle, the guy is not suddenly going to go to electric and buy a vehicle for 1,30,000 or 1,40,000 simply because it's electric and the same performance level. That's going to happen in the lifestyle segment, not in the commuter segment. And your majority of the vehicles on the road are not lifestyle. These are commuter. So there is a problem there. There is a mismatch of expectations versus what is actually being delivered on the ground. And customers are very clearly seeing it that way. They're not buying it.
So buy a vehicle for your 95% use rather than trying to compare it to an ICE vehicle. This might be a nice time to ask a question that we ask all the panelists who come on our show, Naveen. And you touched on FAME 2. FAME 2 set aside $1.3 billion, right? 10,000 crores for the adoption of 1 million vehicles and 500,000 rickshaws by 31st of March, 2022. We are 12 months away and we are nowhere close to that number. And as you said, there needs to be an assessment. So I'm going to ask you a question that's a frivolous question, but it allows for a very pointed answer always. And that is, if you had the opportunity to be Prime Minister of India for one day and could make any decision you wanted at all for the EV industry, what would that one decision be?
I would say that, you know, goals, targeted goals, measurable goals. And then everything else is going to fall in place. So if I say that, you know, 2025 is your cutoff date or 2030 is your cutoff date, let's say even if it's worst case scenario, I say 2030, then what is required in order to reach that 100% conversion? Manufacturing of batteries, the supply chains falling in place. We as a country, as companies, have to invest even in the raw material sources. We also have to look at, you know, whether India has those raw materials or not. And chances are, with a country like India, where we have so much of mineral and metals in the ground, we would have a large part of those as well. So I would say have very firm, concrete goals and then support how we're going to get to those goals.
So staying with your core focus, which is what every good auto company should be doing in the end. A very interesting concept or comment that you made about your charging infrastructure actually being a marketing expense. Because range anxiety almost is an anxiety which might not be real, isn't it? Because most Indians don't really drive above 30 or 40 kilometers a day. It's only when you're doing inter-village transport or inter-town transport in rural India that you're actually doing 50 or 60 kilometers, but in the metropolitan parts of India, you're barely doing 30 or 40 kilometers. So do you see this as an entry-level marketing strategy, the charging network, which eventually can be made redundant as people find other ways to do it? I know that your the other part of your marketing is also that your batteries are detachable. You wouldn't call them swap, I think. You're not swapping. You're just able to take them out and take them to your house and charge and bring them back. So is that the direction you're going in?
Absolutely. So number of years back, actually, what we started doing was installing charging infrastructure in buildings or housing societies. You know, if you're in a place like Mumbai or Bangalore or Gurgaon or Noida or any of these places where you're living in a block of apartments, how do you charge your vehicle on the ground floor? In a lot of cases, you don't have the charging infrastructure. Majority of the cases, actually, nowhere do you have a charging infrastructure which is built in there. So what we started doing initially was creating a letterbox charging station, which was linked to your power supply because you have the meters on the ground floor, even on the stilts. I mean, no matter which building you go to, the meters are all there. And so we were connected to that apartment who had bought the vehicle, but it was very cumbersome to do so. So we came up with the concept of, and since we were already transitioning to lithium-ion batteries, we came up with the concept of having portable batteries to ease and make it convenient for customers. That's worked very well for us. Now imagine a situation where you're not going to a petrol station, you're not standing in the queue at all. Service also in a lot of cases happens at home. The delivery is happening at home. You are just in a very relatively safer environment, or a very safe environment, where you charge your vehicle, take your vehicle battery up to your apartment, plug it into the wall just as you charge your mobile phone or your computer on a day-to-day basis, plug it back into the vehicle and off you go. If you're a heavy user, we can give you a vehicle which is going to go from anything from 70 kilometers upwards to 210 kilometers. So we've got B2B customers who are using these vehicles for these diagnostic labs, for example, and they go into the rural areas. Now we've given the vehicle which have a 210 kilometer range, and the vehicles are being used for about 100, 150 kilometers on a day-to-day basis. So ours is not really a swapping infrastructure battery. It's more of a portable battery. Now there's a difference between the two. Now in a swappable battery, you generally would not be able to take the battery home and charge it in your house. You would have to go back to that swapping station. In our case, you can do it anywhere because, I mean, you own that battery. It's your ownership, so it's not a lease battery. So we've done that across our product range. And this has been very convenient for the customers as well. And so that's why we get a lot of customers who come back and find that. And even the charging infrastructure that we're creating, we don't have to create a very rapid charging infrastructure where we spend a lot of money on each station. We spend very little on each station. And like I said, you know, this is more of a marketing. It's more of customer confidence building than anything else.
I have three rapid fire questions, Naveen. The first one is, you're a climate evangelist. It's one of your passions. And one of the dark underbellies of electric vehicles is, until we move beyond lithium and beyond the lithium chemistries, we're actually raping hills to bring chemicals from overseas to create the energy storage chemistry. Now, I'm entirely confident there's many chemistries that'll come that'll be very environmentally friendly. But lithium has this challenge that we'll have to face, and that's the second life of lithium and what do we do after the second life of the battery. What are your thoughts on that subject?
See, batteries, once they're done with automotive, now no matter whether it's 3 years or 5 years or 6 years, whatever it be the case, these batteries have not reached the end of their life. You know that. Mm-hmm. So what these batteries would go into is refurbishment. Some of the cells or some of the maybe replaced as they've gotten spoiled. And then these would go into stationary applications where they would be remain there for many, many years, simply because the load on the batteries, and especially if it's a lithium-ion battery, in a stationary application is not the same as what it is on a two-wheeler or automotive. Automotive has these peaks and troughs when it comes to the load. And the peaks are really strain out the batteries. Whereas when you look at it from a stationary application, you don't get those kind of peak loads. It's a very different gradual load that you have. So those batteries would remain there. Once they're done with that, which is again a number of years hence, those batteries, the materials are going to be taken out and recycled. So there is going to be a recycling industry also, a refurbishment industry also, which comes in. And even once they've been refurbished, and if they don't go into stationary applications, they could go into warranty applications, etc., or to replace lead acid batteries or to replace other forms of batteries. So I don't foresee a huge problem with lithium ion batteries, at least in the near foreseeable future, because there is a substantial requirement that we have in stationary applications, if nothing else. So once those materials are taken out and then, you know, new batteries are built, those batteries could go into applications which are not as taxing on the battery as what we have for vehicles.
Naveen, do you have any plans to move beyond two-wheelers, for example, into three-wheelers or cars? Or are you going to stay focused on the two-wheeler business, which has been Hero's mainstay?
We are very focused on this business. So we did venture out into the three-wheeler business a couple of years back. We got a fair bit of success there as well. But eventually we pulled back saying because the customer profile is very, very different. So within the same company, within the same organization and within the same team, we don't want any conflicts. So it's got to be a very focused business. You build that business and that's what it's going to take. See, in the three-wheeler business, your brand is not so important. The quality that you're doing is not so important. What is important is pricing. And we couldn't compete on that because we've got this strong Hero brand, which we have with us. And we cannot play around with that brand, or we cannot fool around with that brand at all. So we have to honor that brand. We have to live up to the ethos of that brand, and which is that, you know, we have to get a quality product out to the customers, which is going to last them for a long time. So we've decided to stay in the two-wheeler business, and we will stay in the two-wheeler business, at least for the near foreseeable future. Cars is something that we certainly will not get into, not in the near future at all.
The last question then is another one in a lighter vein. We were looking at your website and you have a number of vehicles, you know, they're called Photon, Optima, Nix, Flash, Atria. And when you look at all automotive companies, they have some very intriguing names, you know, whether it's the Camry or all of the names that the companies come up with, the Nexon, the Xenon. How do automotive companies come up with these names?
That's actually quite a tough one, actually, because you know what you have is a whole bunch of names that you go. So the way that we do it and the way that we've done it in the past is get all our employees to start just giving us names, what they think could be a good name for a vehicle. And then we have a team of people who are just sitting down and just sifting through and then going, you know, it's a first cart, second cart, third cart, fourth cart, fifth cart. And we've come out with these 20 names by the end of it or 10 names by the end of it. Out of these, which of them have a very important factor is what, how easy is it for you to pronounce in different languages? Because, you know, around the country also, you know, people may be speaking in different this thing. How easy it for you to recall that name? So have a complicated name which you can't recall is not a great strategy from that perspective. So a name which is highly recallable, easily pronounceable, and it doesn't mean anything negative in even a different language. And of course, it's got to be not registered by anybody else. So there is a scientific process to it, actually. The name, the typology, the colors that you use for the logo, the colors that you use for that brand, etc. What is it? And a number of companies, if you look at those case studies, they've made those classic mistakes of naming a product which has a different meaning in a different language, or coming out with the color which has a completely different meaning when you look at it from a different perspective. So just that's become a very scientific process now. And we've got marketing companies who also work with us in that process, that how would it look at the vehicle? How do you do the typography? How will the decals look on the vehicle, etc.?
Excellent. Excellent learning for us, Naveen. A visionary with passion and clarity of direction. That's the key takeaway, I think, that we've had from the conversation today. Naveen Munjal, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on our show. Thank you so much for being generous to make time for us. And we do look forward to the next opportunity we have to have you back on the program.
Thank you so much, Ravin. It's been a pleasure being here today.
Thanks, Naveen.
I'm your host for this episode, Ravin Mirchandani. But I would not be here without the amazing Energizing India podcast team. Onkar, our podcast director and the man who makes it all happen in the end, much like a big fat grand Indian wedding, bringing together the research, data and attention to details, all in the timelines to get the next episode out on time. Sri Vikram, our podcast co-host and head of research, and Sunil, who along with me is executive producer of our program. The Energizing India podcast is an Ador Digitron production, giving a voice to the EV industry in India. If you enjoyed listening to us today, make sure to follow us on whatever platform you are listening on, whether it's Spotify, Apple iTunes, or our own portal, energizingindia.tv. Thank you very much, and see you on the next episode.